Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
A woman who worked in Denver says she wasn't getting paid the city's minimum wage.
I actually saw one of the infographics at a bus stop that said, hey, Denver minimum wage is 19 some odd an hour.
Now she's taking the state to court. A MAGA podcaster who has called for the hanging of Colorado Democrats makes a new claim about political violence. And Colorado has lost a legend in political journalism. Tonight, we remember the impact Lynn Bartles had on the state of Colorado. Minimum wage is supposed to be just that, the minimum you make. A former state worker says she was being paid less than minimum wage because of where she physically went to work. She filed a lawsuit against the state this week. Our Spencer Soischer joins us. And Spencer, this woman says she was an employee for the state's Department of Revenue. And while she worked there, her office location moved from Lakewood to a state building in Denver.
Yeah, Jenny Tellis says she was paying Denver taxes, but not getting Denver wages. And there's a wrinkle here, though. Lawmakers just passed a new law that just took effect this month that lets the state ignore local minimum wages for state workers with a union contract. But Tellis's attorney says that shouldn't wipe out what she's already owed. So the state minimum wage is $15.16 per hour, but state law allows cities around the area to have a higher minimum wage, including Denver, which has a minimum wage of $19.29 an hour. Tellis says in her lawsuit she was actually making more than the state minimum wage, but less than the Denver minimum wage. She said she only realized it because of an infographic about Denver's minimum wage that she saw at a bus stop. And she claims when her office moved to Denver, the state never adjusted the wage.
I recognized after a month or two that our pay had not gone up. In fact, it decreased a little bit for Denver tax. If they're going to ask folks to drive out to work in this place and get taxed at city rates, then people should be making city rate money.
Now, Tellis wants to be paid for the difference in pay while she was working in Denver and is asking a judge to make it a class action for any state worker who may have been shorted the same way over the last 3 years. Denver is one of four cities in Colorado with its own minimum wage. That law allowing state workers to be paid less than the minimum in the city, again, only applies to union workers with a contract.
Spencer, I can imagine a lot of people now looking at their paychecks and making sure they're paid the right amount. And if you're in Denver, you do have that Denver employee tax. That's what that extra tax she was talking about. So beware of that. Thank you, Spencer. MAGA podcaster Joe Altman, who ran and lost for Colorado Republican Party chair last month, said on his show this week that violence is going to be necessary and there are targets. Altman has previously called for the hanging of Democratic leaders like Governor Jared Polis. He calls the Jewish leaders of the state, including Polis, Attorney General Phil Weiser, and Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, the synagogue of Satan Jews. And this week he said there are specific targets for violence.
We're going to be drawn to a place where ultimately I think violence is going to be necessary. And for those of you that say, oh, Joe's calling for violence and he's talking about the synagogue of Satan again, and oh my gosh, is the anti-Semite because the ADL says it? No. Every time we solve a problem in our country, we solve it with violence. And all of a sudden, we're not going to be able to fight against evil without using violence. I think it'll be short-lived. I think we know who our targets are. And there are targets.
Democratic leadership at the state capitol, the House Speaker and Senate President, put out a statement condemning Altman's comments, saying in part, "We stand together in steadfast opposition to rising violent rhetoric and threats that put people at risk." Altman will be in a Denver courtroom next month for a defamation trial. In 2020, former Dominion Voting System executive Eric Coomer sued the Trump campaign and Altman, among others, over unproven claims Coomer rigged the 2020 election. That trial is set to begin after nearly 5.5 years. A quick note about tonight's program. We're broadcasting on Channel 20 right now, and we're going to turn you over to the Rockies game at 6:15. Next, we'll continue through 6:30 streaming on 9 News. As a result, our commercial breaks will run at different times, but we have just as much time to talk about the news here as on any other night. In today's polarizing political climate, there are few people who are spoken about kindly by everyone, regardless of political affiliation. Lynn Bartles was one of them. I struggle to use the past tense. Lynn Bartles, former Rocky Mountain News and Denver Post journalist and Colorado politics historian, has passed away. Lynn Bartles is everything good about Colorado politics. She mastered the beat of Statehouse reporter writing for the Rocky Mountain News, and then when she stepped in front of the cameras, she became one of the faces of the newspaper's closing in 2009. She continued her work at the Denver Post, where she taught me the easiest way to understand state legislation. When she took a buyout and joined the communication side of politics, she stayed close to her Capitol Corps colleagues when Racine's was still the place to go. Tributes to Lynn have come from all over the political spectrum. Democratic Governor Jared Polis recognized her amateur photography, writing, "Lynn's infectious personality and ongoing quest for selfies made her someone that everyone wanted to know." Former Republican U.S. Senator Cory Gardner said her work defined Colorado politics, its leadership, and the intrigue of power. Lynn had everyone's number you ever needed. She probably had a selfie with that person, too. Lynn's family shared that she was recently diagnosed with glioblastoma, an aggressive brain cancer. Lynn most recently worked for Republican State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer, who wrote, "She will deeply miss Lynn's friendship, counsel, and her stories about her escapades with the muckety mucks." Lynn Bartles was 69.
Thanks for being with Next while I'm away. The Sun Valley neighborhood in Denver, in the shadow of Mile High, is one of the neediest neighborhoods in the city, and it's also expanding quickly, doubling in size with a big new affordable housing project. That's where this week's Word of Thanks microgiving campaign is fighting hunger through the Sun Valley Kitchen and Community Center. They provide freshly made meals for their neighbors and also no-cost groceries that families can take with them to get through the week. They say that they're seeing a mix of new faces and familiar friends there, but the need in that neighborhood is constant and it is growing. This is a relatively small nonprofit. The dollars we raise are going to go a long way to sustain their food program for years to come. To join me and a bunch of other Coloradans in helping out, scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491. Almost 8,000 of you are signed up to give as a Word of Thanks Fund monthly donor. And that's added almost $50,000 to recent weekly campaigns. Thank you.
Jaden.
I know, right?
I was expecting some map behind you, and I just want to get straight to that forecast.
Well, thank you for that, Marshall. Yeah, you know, today is Juneteenth, and there's going to be a lot of events as we head into this weekend. So let's talk about the weather just a tad bit. Tomorrow's parade will be at the low 80s. Lots of sunshine, really nice and beautiful for the Juneteenth parade. So hopefully everyone gets out there and enjoy that. Highs tomorrow, I mean, another hot day. We're in the summer months, 94 degrees here in Denver. I mean, look at all the triple digits down towards the southeast. But we're not just tracking the heat. We're also talking about some gusty conditions, some gusts closer to 40 to 50 miles per hour across the central mountains, really all of the high country, as well as the western slope. That will continue until 9 p.m. It's already in effect as of right now. Noticing the metro area is not included with that, as well as the eastern plains, but we are tracking some severe storms for the eastern plains. Noticing that level 3 out towards Burlington, level 2 shaded in yellow, and also level 1 shaded in green. Could see some large hail damaging winds, and we can't rule out that isolated tornado or two. So definitely stay weather aware as we head into your afternoon hours for Saturday. But the rest of your 7-day, I mean, really nice and beautiful conditions. Next rain chances don't return until we head into Monday. Marshall?
Thank you, Jaden. A nonprofit is the new owner of an Aurora apartment complex that gained national attention after claims it was taken over by a Venezuelan gang. This week, we talked to three of the Democrats running for Colorado Attorney General, and tonight, you'll hear what they plan to do to fight the Trump administration. Time for Rockies baseball for everyone watching here on Channel 20. Hot night at the ballpark, although unlike the World Cup games, I don't think there's hydration breaks. Although I guess in between the innings, between the top and the bottom of the inning, that's a hydration break for anybody. The Rockies are hosting the Pittsburgh Pirates tonight. And I assume people are still trying to get in the gates. Plenty of good seats to be had. Turn off your TV and head to Coors Field. The Aurora apartment complex that President Trump claimed was taken over by a Venezuelan gang has a new owner. Records show that CBZ Management sold the property for $4.5 million to the nonprofit, the East Colfax Community Collective. The apartment complex became national news after the owners claimed the gang, Tren de Aragua, took over the buildings in June 2024. Trump repeated the claim at a campaign stop, saying Aurora had been taken over by TDA, and city leaders repeatedly pushed back against those claims. The city closed the apartment in February 2025. The East Colfax Community Collective had helped neighbors at the complex organize a rally to push back against the claims that TDA had taken over the property. Democratic Attorney General Phil Weiser is proud to have sued the Trump administration dozens of times. Tonight, we hear from three of the four Democratic candidates running for AG on their legal strategy to fend off the feds. The frontrunner, Jenna Griswold, declined to answer any questions. Kyle Clark has tonight's next conversation with Boulder District Attorney Michael Dougherty, former federal prosecutor Hetal Doshi, and workers' rights attorney David Seligman.
We lose the confidence and trust of the people we serve if we're taking Trump to court just to make a point. It has to be done well, it has to be done right, and it has to be done with the win.
And that's certainly what critics accuse Attorney General Phil Weiser of doing, of just stacking up or joining a bunch of lawsuits to make a political point against Trump. When you look at his 65 or so suits, do you feel like they're well-founded, that Colorado should be in those fights? Do you see missed opportunities?
I don't see missed opportunities. I certainly see Phil Weiser using discretion. The Democratic attorneys general from around the country have brought far more lawsuits than the 65 or so that Phil Weiser and his team have brought. And right now, the attorney general is on the front lines of defending the rule of law. Because quite frankly, from my perspective, Congress is basically dysfunctional. And they're no longer acting as a check on the White House. So it's incumbent upon the rule of law and the attorney general to stand up and fight for what's right.
I do think that the General Weiser's standard of is the conduct unlawful and does it harm Coloradans is the right test. I would add some meat on the bones of that second part of the test to say the harm to Coloradans can feel like an amorphous concept. And so to me, the harm to Coloradans that really matters in terms of using resources to fight the federal government as opposed to looking inward would be, is the harm to one of our deeply held values or safety? Or number two, is there a specific economic harm in the form of funding or opportunities like SNAP benefits or NCAR funding come to mind?
Is there any point in which resource management within the office plays a part in which suits to bring or join?
It's top of mind. It's one of the first questions. And this is something that as someone who has led inside the government, in my last role with the Department of Justice, I led teams of more than 800 lawyers and professional staff. And every day I had to make trade-off decisions. If I'm suing Google, that means there's another case that I might not be able to file. And so I think about this question of taking on Donald Trump precisely through this lens, because I will not have this administration and his cronies make sure that they set an agenda for us. It should be the other way around.
I think we should be very worried about, you know, an attorney general coming in who's taking all these cases to get on, you know, MSNBC or something like that, right? Holding the Trump administration accountable is about protecting the people of Colorado, right? But we got a lot of tools in the toolbox. And some of them aren't just, again, about standing up to the Trump administration. It's also about standing up to the corruption and corporate abuse that we're seeing right here in Colorado. Look, we live in the second gilded age, right? We are seeing concentrations of wealth and power unlike anything we have seen in this country. We just saw a trillionaire created off of, you know, building the AI systems that are spying on us and jacking up our prices and driving down our wages. We don't need to be living this way. And one of the core things we've got to do to take on the forces of corruption and corporate abuse is use the laws on the books to protect people. We got a lot of work to do, and it's active work.
You can see Kyle's full interviews with all three on the next YouTube channel. Again, Griswold declined to appear and answer questions.
Our next question tonight comes from a viewer named Denise and our coworker Anna, who both want to know why some primary ballot races have a write-in candidate option while others don't.
Well, let's use this example. The Republican race for governor has a space to write in a candidate on the left, but the Democratic race for governor does not. Why? It's because write-in is an official candidate. Someone has to file an affidavit of intent to run as a write-in candidate. Here's how you get on the ballot. You either go to a political party's caucus or assembly and get enough support to be on the ballot, or you collect enough signatures from voters, or you file to be an official write-in candidate. And for the Republican governor's race, Kelvin K-Man Wimberly is the write-in candidate. Here's one other note. You can't just write in any name. So for you jokesters who just want to write in Mickey Mouse, because for some reason Mickey Mouse is a popular write-in name, in Colorado, those votes don't count. the only votes that are counted for write-in are the actual write-in candidate's name. Bet you didn't know all that. Send us your next question. Anything about Colorado that you've wondered about, anything election-related for the next week, someone else has got to be wondering it too. Please write us next at 9news.com, or you can text us at the number 303-871-1491. A Colorado Supreme Court ruling about Telluride this week is raising new questions about a high-profile development project in Greeley. The Cascadia project would bring a hockey arena, water park, and hotel to the area in Greeley. However, people there voted to put it on pause. This week, the state Supreme Court made a decision favoring a planned unit development in Telluride. The court unanimously ruled that people cannot vote to change a planned use development agreement because that is an administrative and not a legislative decision. Supporters of the Cascadia project say that ruling should apply in Greeley as well, but those opposing the project clearly disagree.
Showed what we've argued all along, that special elections on land use decisions like this are not constitutional.
Basically, it's saying any kind of amendment made to a PUD is kind of where this comes into play. And that's not even close to what our situation was. This was about actual original zoning.
Greeley leaders said they're still reviewing the ruling from the Colorado Supreme Court and its impacts.
Like a big family reunion. You can't wait for it. It's just the thing to do in the summertime. It's Juneteenth and we outside.
It's Friday, it's Juneteenth, and that means plenty of good news to share with you tonight. Every week we ask the same question, what's your good news? Today, our Ann Herbst went to Denver's Five Points neighborhood where people were getting ready for the weekend-long Juneteenth celebration on Welton Street.
Happy Juneteenth. It's June 19th, 2026.
Today's Juneteenth.
I have on my For the Culture headband.
We are out here at Juneteenth, getting ready for Juneteenth. Fest happening tomorrow, so just doing wonderful things.
And we are in Five Points, Denver's historically black neighborhood, if you didn't know. Now you know.
Yes. Down at Five Points.
What's my good news? Oh my gosh.
The good news is that it's Juneteenth. I knew she was gonna laugh.
We have a new addition in our family. So I'm a auntie again. And so my new niece is 2 months.
My good news? Oh man, the good news is that it's Juneteenth. And wonderful music festival happen tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, this weekend I get to be the Grand Marshal of the Juneteenth Parade for the second year in a row.
The slaves in Texas were not free, and so they were freed on this day in 1865. So that means a lot to me, and that's why I usually take off on this holiday.
You know, we need to make sure that we're continuing to love each other, build our networks, and celebrate with each other on days like this.
I'm off today. I don't have to take off on that day anymore, so we're off automatically. And now the whole world gets to learn more about us.
This day is about being connected to one another. That's all we have.
Chuck wrote in tonight to say he had a friend pass away from the same thing Lynn Bartles just died of. Please take some time online today and search Lynn Bartles. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.